Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report for today. It is Tuesday, November 9th, 2021. I want to just start out by saying this. This is going to be an extremely important first 30 minutes of this show. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do 30 minutes, bring Stan Deo on, and then replay the 30 minutes at the on the backside. Only because people want answers, people want to be protected, people want to know, see the big picture. And I'm going to give you the big picture, and I'm also going to give you the answers to how you can stay safe and stay healthy. What's the magic bullet here to keep this manufactured bioweapon out of your body? How do we do that? Well, there's an 8-minute video of a frontline doctor. When I say frontline, I'm talking about on the lines, who treated over 7,000 people in the desert border town in California. If you haven't seen this, he gives you the magic bullet to take care of this bioweapon, where you don't need these genetic mRNA shots and what have you. But first, I want to roll out this clip. It's just a 2-minute video clip, 2-minute and 20-second video clip. This was on a Twitter feed. The Twitter handle is COVID-1984. The name is @NeverSleever. And it reads as this: my good friend breaks down Prince Charles' cryptic speech at COP26. Now, we've spoken about that conference, okay? Now, but this gets into something a little bit different. This is the big picture. And a lot of people have missed this completely in terms of the presentations, the presenters at this climate conference. This is what it's all about. In my view, this analysis is right on the money, and this is what it's all about. This provides the bigger picture. Notice the use of the pronouns. I'm just prepping you ahead of time. Notice the use of the pronouns by the presenter, Prince Charles, the royal family, specifically the pronoun his. Who might he be referring to? And again, that's in this analysis. So let's roll this minor commentary afterwards and then getting into some additional information. Go ahead and roll it.
He wants to garner all of the assets in the world, trillions out of his mouth, for his disposal. And he's not referring to himself. It's an other that he's referring to.
With trillions at his disposal, far beyond global GDP.
He follows that by saying, basically, the world leaders aren't smart enough to pull this off.
And with the greatest respect, beyond even the governments of the world's leaders.
Which refers back to the his. That's why it has to be in this power.
Here we need a vast military-style campaign to marshal the strength of the global private sector.
So he's advocating an individual, in my assessment, that's going to run in a military style, is marshaling his word again, the assets, the people, and the will to change the climate. But it's really a consolidation of power in one entity. And that's the scary part. I refer back to the word his. There's no precursor in his. I looked at the whole speech. There's no precursor to who his refers to. It's just an entity. It's a personal pronoun of somebody. It's an individual. I have a Christian background. Could be the Antichrist. I don't know. To fundamentally change the financial system. So we have cryptos, we have fiat, we have gold, we have silver, and we have countries that are printing money. The United States is the leader in that, that they don't have. Debt. And you can't do that. You can't run a business, a country, anything on that. So what are you going to do? Collapse it? And what happens then with COVID, with the supply chain issues, with all of these things that are all distractions, because the ultimate thing is the power grab.
It offers the only real prospect of achieving fundamental economic transition.
It's the one. And I believe that that man has an idea of what the one is. And it ain't a good thing.
All right. Now, again, that clip inside that Twitter thing was edited, obviously, for time. But you can see where this is going. All right. You can see that Charles is not using the royal pronoun, like the royal we. He's not using a royal his. He's talking about one specific person, one specific entity, which he just said his. Well, who is he? Didn't say. Why not? Well, wouldn't be prudent to summon George W. Bush, right? Or George H.W. Bush. Wouldn't be prudent. Think about this now. So we're seeing, in my view anyway, with the advent of the World Economic Forum, Fourth Industrial Revolution, or Fourth Revolution, Fourth Turning, whatever you want to say, however you want to describe it, the rollout of the plandemic, the bioweapon, but more importantly, the rollout of the mRNA genetic tools to really encompass all of the population. Now, before I get to the, you know, how do we attack this bioweapon before we need to go to the hospital, or how do we save ourselves from this bioweapon? I want to run this, because in advance of that, this is clip two, Eric the Tech. This will show you the concerns about people in the vaccine, legitimate vaccine industry. Don't forget, I went over yesterday or the other day. We had definitions change. The definition of a vaccine was changed on September 1st. The definition of vaccination was changed along with that. 2015, it was tweaked, and then 2021, it was completely changed. They've been preparing for this for a long time. This is about the global takeover of all of us. You know, I say they're coming for our guns. Oh, I'm going to get to that too. Hang on. But they're coming for us. As Steve Quayle says, they're coming for us. Now, but from a vaccine perspective, and I use that term legitimately from a vaccine perspective, from a vaccine maker perspective, this is the head of, or this is a vaccine maker, a guy who actually creates vaccines in controlled environments, speaking about the mRNA tool. So let's roll clip two.
The mRNA vaccines are an example for that cell and gene therapy. I always like to say, if we had surveyed 2 years ago in the public, would you be willing to take a gene or cell therapy and inject it into your body, we would have probably had a 95% refusal rate. I think this pandemic has also opened many people's eyes to innovation in the way that was maybe not possible before.
Can you pause that for a second? Oh, it's over. 27 seconds. How quickly time flies. Did you hear what he said? Now, this is a Bayer executive talking about mRNA technology, saying, you know, if we, absent of this bioweapon, these are my words now, absent of this bioweapon, people would not have taken this willingly, taken this mRNA tool willingly. What does that say from a guy who's a Bayer executive, a pharmaceutical guy, a big pharma guy, somebody who has created these vaccines? What does that say? It says a lot, I believe. And I think we should start paying attention to these people. And oh, by the way, the VAERS system is very, very extremely underreported. They even took out on some of the CD or on some of the CD sponsored and FDA sponsored websites, plural. They have removed myocarditis and pericarditis from the tolls. Okay, from the adverse events, at least calculator counting them. Make sure you understand that. And I'm telling you right now, there are more people dropping than are being reported. There are more people dying as a consequence of this than are being reported. All right, now, the big deal here. To me, this is the biggest deal. This is the best. I've talked to people who have suffered through COVID, long COVID, the effects of. And in each case, the majority of cases, the people who have had the worst of times and even passed away are the people who waited too long to seek treatment or were denied treatment. And the best thing I think I can do for my listeners and viewers is to give you a protocol that I believe, and I'm not giving medical advice, but I've seen this, I have copies of this. This has worked before on others. Okay, from my personal experience, and again, this is not my medical advice. This is from a physician, a doctor, Dr. Brian Tyson, who spoke at the Florida COVID Summit on his early treatment, the success thereof, with Dr. George Farid, treating over 7,000 patients. Please save this, download this, take notes, write this down, check this out. The link will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. But in my view, the best thing I can give to the viewers and listeners is hope and an answer to fighting this, keeping this away from you, your family, what to do, what to get, where to get it, this is it. So listen to this, pass this along. Again, the link for this clip, compliments of the Florida COVID Summit, will be in the program description box at HagmanReport.com. This is clip 3. Eric the Tech, go ahead and run this. This is about 8 minutes.
For him to tell his story. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for having me here. It's been amazing to see all of the faces, the attention. How many providers do we have in here? Raise your hand for me. Okay, great. So I'm an outpatient, urgent care doc. I had worked for an ER for about 14 years. Found my niche. We started an urgent care in El Central California, in the middle of the desert, right on the border. Small town, but large population just on the other side. A lot of retired individuals there. So when COVID was coming around, I knew we were going to be in trouble because there were 2.5 million people in Mexicali. We're in the middle of a desert, and the biggest tertiary center is 90 miles away. 90 miles. We had two small community hospitals. So like many of us, I took it upon myself to do my research. My treatment protocol came out right around the same time Dr. Zelenko came out with his. And the hydroxychloroquine protocol treatment started with the 2005 SARS chloroquine article that was published, where it said, chloroquine is a potent inhibitor of the SARS coronavirus and its spread. That's where we got our basis. The protocol developed through the year, and so I'm gonna tell you what I use and how I address these patients. Number one, we saw everybody in person, so I got to see them face-to-face. I'm a face-to-face doctor, I'm not a telemedicine doctor. I have to see the disease for myself. So those who presented with basically just upper URI symptoms, cough, not really cough, but more runny nose, headache, fever, those patients got hydroxychloroquine. We started them on 400 milligrams twice a day on day one, and then 200 milligrams three times a day, day two through five. That's number one drug. Number two, we gave them Zithromax or doxycycline. And number three, we gave them zinc. And the zinc was either the zinc sulfate, the 220, or just regular over-the-counter zinc, 25, and we gave that to them twice a day. We also used vitamin D3, 5,000 units a day, vitamin C, 500 milligrams twice a day. And we started using N-acetylcysteine, NAC, okay, 600 milligrams a day. That was the foundation of our treatment. That's what it started. if patients had pulmonary symptoms, if they had the chest pain and they had the shortness of breath, we did chest x-rays. We found early on that the chest x-rays were positive for inflammation. So what did we do? We started treating the inflammation. So I gave them 6 milligrams of Decadron, and we started them on inhaled budesonide in the nebulized form. I wanted to stay away from the systemic treatment because I didn't want to really suppress their immune system, but I wanted to treat the inflammation. So that's why we went to the nebulized budesonide form. And amazingly, what happened was we found in 2 to 3 days, 99% of our patients were better. Wow. Right? We brought them back. It's something that I've always done. I bring patients back every 2 to 3 days until they're better. So day 2, day 3, they're coming back. Chest x-rays are improved. Oxygenation saturation is improved. Fevers are now gone. Headaches are now gone. Then we did the standard, you know, it was initially 14 days come back. And we had these little serology tests that we were able to purchase. And we proved that they had IgG or IgM at the time. And we said, okay, your symptoms are gone. It does look like a true positive COVID case. And we let them go back to society. That's been replicated now 7,000 plus times between me and Dr. Fareed. When we looked at those patients who started treatment before day 7, we have a 0% mortality with one hospitalization. If we started treatment after day 7, we've had 4, I think now maybe 5 people have passed, and we've had 8 hospitalizations. But what we've noticed is because we're the only treatment center basically in our area, we started getting sicker and sicker patients. So the treatment also needed to go and be extended at times. So my providers, I want you to understand, it's not just a 5-day one and done. Sometimes you have to extend treatment. Sometimes you have to reevaluate people. Sometimes they're going to need oxygen. Sometimes they're going to need additional medications. You saw from the list from Dr. Corey, there's a ton of medications we can use. And one that's not been talked about, I don't think here today, is Singulair. So Singulair being a leukotriene inhibitor, and we use that a lot with asthma patients, okay? With those pulmonary symptoms, I started using Singulair at night, 10 milligrams, okay? And that also showed a significant improvement in their oxygenation and pulse oximetry. Aspirin is a standard that I think everybody should be taking. So aspirin, I think was, I forgot to mention that. Everybody gets 325 of aspirin if you're an adult, 81 milligrams if you're a teenager. Yes, I'm giving aspirin to teenagers. It's a little, you know, against practice per se, but it's not. Reye syndrome in teenagers basically doesn't happen. So the moral of the story is look at the symptoms, treat what you see, and use appropriate drugs for those treatments. It's not a diagnosis of COVID. It's a diagnosis of inflammation. It's a diagnosis of pneumonia. It's a diagnosis of hypoxemia. It's a diagnosis of a febrile illness. It's a diagnosis of nausea and sometimes vomiting or diarrhea. Hydration. Giving people IV fluid has made a big difference. Getting people monoclonal antibody early on in treatment is also recommended and has been shown to have a huge improvement. So I've seen from 2 months to 102 years old, I've seen unvaccinated to vaccinated to even booster vaccinated positive patients. But the one thing is they all respond to treatment. And I think that's the biggest lesson that I want to make sure that everybody hears. Early treatment is so crucial, and they need to stop blocking us from saving people's lives. Thank you.
Awesome job, Ryan. Thank you, Dr. Tyson.
All right, folks, I hope you paid attention to that, because that to me was an important protocol for you to have and for you to acquire if you start feeling sick. The time, I would say this, that the time to make sure you have all of these items in place and a doctor who will prescribe them specifically is right before you get sick. I mean, before you get sick, you just can't tell when that's going to happen. But I would have things lined up. And by the way, again, I'm not giving medical advice. If this was me, if I was in the position where I was ill, I would never allow myself to be checked into a hospital. I personally have seen, and now this is me talking, okay, I've personally seen people who have been admitted to hospitals, been put on a protocol of remdesivir, and have, and also the antibiotic along with that, having their kidneys and other organs shut down, causing their deaths. I'm just saying that. So you need as well, in addition to all of this, you need a patient advocate. You need someone to advocate for you in the event you do find yourself in a hospital situation. And you need to have a doctor who understands. And the time to do this is not when you're in trouble, when you're not thinking straight, when your spouse is not thinking straight because you're in trouble. The time to do it is now, because we can beat this in the protocol fashion that was just described. 7,000 people, yeah, that's more that's more testing than was done in advance of these mRNA shots, although the mRNA technology has been in practice for a number of years. All right. The other thing I want to mention very quickly here, this is something that's not getting a lot of play. And again, folks, please, at this half hour is going to be on the other, on the backside of Stan's appearance. But the issue with guns, again, they're not coming after the guns only. They're coming after us, the people who hold the guns. And if you saw the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, very interesting turn of events there. They should, in my view, they should put the prosecutors, make the prosecutors in this case, those who decided to prosecute, put them in jail. But I digress. The Biden regime now, and folks understand this, they're stockpiling millions of records on U.S. gun owners. And this is, in fact, I believe, although the question is act, or the indication is there, some fear it could be a precursor to a federal database. It already is a federal database. The story appeared on The Blaze, and this is something that came up, last month, at least initially last month, and then the Washington Free Beacon reported over the weekend, this past weekend, that the Biden regime, they are amassing millions of records on U.S. gun owners in what some gun rights advocates fear could be the precursor to a federal registry. Well, we already have a federal registry of NICS checks, okay, of the gun checks or the weapons checks. But what about the weapons themselves? Now, according to an internal document obtained by the Washington Free Beacon, under Biden's direction, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, they've collected more than 54 million out-of-business records detailing gun transactions and other private firearm information over in the past year alone. So it means, that's what this means. If you go to a mom-and-pop shop, you buy a gun, you pass a background check, they fill out a receipt for your weapon with a serial number on it, and they keep it, right? Well, what happens when they go out of business? They turn it over to the government. In this case, the ATF takes it and is beginning to and has been compiling this gun registry list on the federal level. Now, it's notable here in the Blaze report that since 1968, U.S. law required licensed firearm retailers to go out of business to transfer their private records detailing gun transactions to the ATF's National Tracing Center Division Repository in West Virginia. Now, isn't it interesting that there... They had so many records that the so many paper records that a floor collapsed under the weight of those records. Now you may think, well, this is going to be quite the task given the amount of gun owners and guns out there. Yes, but hey, never ascribe incompetence or say that, you know, the government's too incompetent to work on something this big and this important. So keep your eyes open for this. I just want to, again, I want to tell you, I'm going to start out with a big picture. And that was the analysis by that gentleman who watched the speech. And you can watch the entire COP26 summit, the climate change summit. But very specifically from about Prince Charles and who he's referring to in the not-so-royal pronoun his. Who is he referring to? Seems like there's somebody in the wings, doesn't there? And again, the royal family. Yeah. Hey, if any more, look at that concert where those children, the young people died. One, I think, is as young as 9. And the demonic illustration, the weird symbolism there. What's going on with that? And what's going on with everything? And by the way, talk about what's going on with things. Did you see this? I don't have a clip for this, but the latest video of Biden standing at a podium in the executive office building, but with a podium with the presidential seal on it. Eric, did you see this? They blurred out, or the seal, the presidential seal was blurred out. Did you see that?
No.
Okay. In fact, Chuck Woolery had sent out a Twitter thing saying, what's this all about? Strange. So what's really going on? You have a fake stage at a fake White House with a fake president blurring out a seal. What's going on? All right, real quick on the Kyle Rittenhouse. I'm not sure we have enough time to get to this. Just very quickly, conservative Treehouse reported on this. It's reported everywhere. About 30, 45 seconds of just absolute pummeling by the defense against the prosecution. Can you play that? Are you able to play that that video? Just like 35, 40 seconds of that? All right, let's watch this and listen carefully to this. It might be a little hard to hear because they're not on microphones here, but this is the prosecution. And watch the big guy in the background. When they turn around to show right after Rittenhouse, you're going to see the big guy in the prosecution in the background. Go ahead and play that.
Yes.
Okay. That's Mr. Rittenhouse?
Correct.
Okay. Now, you'd agree your firearm is pointed at Mr. Rittenhouse, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And once your firearm is pointed at Mr. That's when he fires his gun. Yes?
No.
Sir, look, I don't want to... Does this look like right now your arm is being shot?
That looks like my bicep being vaporized, yes.
Okay. And it's being vaporized as you're pointing your gun directly at him. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, so... When you were standing 3 to 5 feet from him with your arms up in the air, he never fired. Right?
Correct.
It wasn't until you pointed your gun at him, advanced on him, with your gun, now your hands down, pointed at him, that he fired, right?
Correct.
And there it is. And there it is. There's Kyle Rittenhouse being shown. Can you advance it just manually a little bit until you see the guy in the back, right there, back a little bit, I think, keep going a little bit longer, like seconds. You're going to see a guy with face palming in the back. If you haven't seen this already, there's a guy holding his head, the big guy holding his head. That's right afterwards, right after the face palm. That guy right there, the big guy in the back on the prosecution holding his head. Folks, do check it out. That's a conservative Treehouse, Kyle Rittenhouse. So we're going to be right back with Stan Dale. Please share this segment with everyone you know. Share the segment, the COVID protocol. You know, I closed the last hour. What, by the way, welcome to Hagmann. It is the Hagmann Report for today, Tuesday, the 9th day of November, 2021. I closed the last segment with Kyle Rittenhouse, the prosecution. I'm going to tell you right now, Kyle Rittenhouse killed two, injured one. All three basically were felons. It's my understanding. At least two, the two that he shot and killed were felons. The third is, at least in my view, on his way to a felony based on his testimony in court. But that aside. All right. But keep your eye on that, because that's going to, I believe that's going to play an important role one way or the other in terms of the what's going to happen next. Also, hey, you know, as you get older, you really give thanks to people that you appreciate. And I appreciate Stan and Holly Dale more than I can express for a lot of reasons. They're just pillars of the scientific community. They're pillars of the information community, and they have been for decades. But before I get to Stan, I want to mention this. You know, I remember Thanksgiving in 1978 specifically, and 1979 specifically. Remember the Carter years? Remember that? I thought that was bad then. Today, this Thanksgiving, it could be one of the most expensive Thanksgivings ever. Turkey prices are up 41%, home heating oil up 115%, food prices in general up 10.5%. Turkeys, if you can get them alone, processed turkeys are up, the price are up 40.7%. That's 40.7% compared with a year ago. And this is from the Department of Labor's Producer Price Index as of today. Now, that's even after falling a seasonally adjusted 1% in October. Think about this now. So, although, you know, we give thanks, it's going to be much more expensive this Thanksgiving than it ever was. Yeah. Home heating oil is up 114.8 or 115%. Residential natural gas prices up nearly 30%, coming in at 28.7. This according to the PPI. And the electricity is up 5.6%, will be. So get ready for a dark winter in many ways, shapes, and forms. But what's not dark is the sunshine provided by the Dale, Stan Dale, Holly Dale, standale.com. Folks, go to standale.com. While you're there, make sure you get a, especially for Christmas, get an EMP shield. Go to empshield.com. Use the promo code Hagmann. There you will get $50 off for one. More discount deals available in quantity. Get one for your car, your car, your generator. You get the idea. Get one for Santa. Get one for your son-in-law. Wink, wink. Or from your son-in-law. Wink, wink, nod, nod. That's right. But empshield.com and promo code there is Hagmann. And look, folks, big. It's a big deal. Because I was thinking about Stan and him talking about the sun and seeing all kinds of reports about the sun and all that stuff. So with me and right now is Stan.
Santa's on a diet. So
Santa's on a diet.
Leave an EMP shield on the plate.
There you go. You start, yeah. Because, well, you can't afford the cookies and milk to get put out for Santa, so you can't afford an EMP shield. Definitely. And Santa, I'm sure, will take that and put it on his sleigh. All right. Stan Dale from standale.com. Stan, thanks for so much.
I wish.
Yeah.
We're like everybody else, kind of, you know, watching the price of everything go through the roof.
No, it's just crazy. I mean... And if you can get the stuff, turkeys, before, you know, you'd see turkeys like, now it's, no, just a few.
And chicken's price has gone way up, you know, just incredibly in the last week.
Yeah, they have.
Airline strikes, you know, fuel shortages, it's going to make people traveling to and from for Thanksgiving very expensive if they can get a flight at all.
Weather's bad. You know, who knows? You may not get a flight. It might be canceled because of weather for one airline.
Doug has to give me a 50% pay raise now.
He's holding me hostage, Stan. he's got a gun to my
go, Eric. Go. Good luck. You know, I wonder how long it's going to be, Doug, before they start hitting us, you know, which have, you know, the companies, the small businesses, which have under 100 employees, like one or two, like, you know, Holly and I and you and Eric. You know, were they going to put mask mandates and penalties on us? Well, this will be like this on the show, you know, just all like that, talking through these masks.
The chair is against the wall, but let them try. That's what I'm going to say. Let them try. Go ahead. Let them try. Of course, that's what James O'Keefe said before his apartment was raided by the FBI for an allegedly stolen diary that he tried to turn over to law enforcement. What an abuse of power that is. But hey, you know what? I'm ready. So let's rock. Go ahead.
I know we've been thinking about, you know, fuel for like our natural gas coming in the house. That's more expensive. Or propane, you know, we stored propane, but we don't use it for our main, you know, heating and cooking. But even that, it's almost impossible to buy or even rent a propane tank, you know, one of those 500 gallon or 1,000 gallon tanks. You just can't find them. And, you know, we bought a bunch of those little, what do you call them, like 20 pound.
The grill stuff for the grill.
Yeah, the grill. Yeah. And, you know, and fill those up so that we've got emergency cooking. We're going to have to turn our thermometer down in the house, you know, our thermostat, because of the increased natural gas price. But we've also got a wrench handy to go out should there be an attack on the gas distribution networks, you know, the natural gas networks. The pressure in various areas will suddenly zoom through the roof. So if we have time and are warned in time, we're going to go out to our valve out there to the gas meter in the house and turn it off so that it's across the pipe turned off so that it doesn't build up pressure and blow up our house inside. All the EMP shields in the world are not going to protect you if your gas line is, you know, blowing up your house through the stove or whatever else you've got. So it's another thing you need to take advantage of. Go out with your wrench if you've got natural gas and check to see how to turn it off. Obviously about 90 degrees where it is now.
Going into the house, right?
Yeah, going into the house.
Okay. You want not in the basement. But in the house, right?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so, yeah. I don't want to confuse people, but there's multiple shutoffs. Probably shut off for your furnace, shut off for your hot water tank, depending on when your house was built. But there's a shutoff outside that's the main shutoff. Make sure you do it out there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the main shutoff out at the meter. Right. You know, I'd go out and look at it now just to be sure you know how to turn it off in an emergency because, you know, in the last two or three years over in the New England states, there were probably 12, 13 homes in a neighborhood that got burned like that because the gas pressure went crazy. And the control of the gas pressure is for these little isolated boxes that, you know, control the regional pressure and distribution of gas, electricity as well, but gas in this case. And the thing got blocked or, you know, the chip got damaged, whatever. And so the pressure went through the roof in these homes and, you know, caught fire, blew them up. Burned them to the ground. So just another thing for you to be cautious about. Now, what causes these distribution, you know, networks and stuff to fail? An EMP pulse, for one thing. EMP pulse from the sun, EMP pulse from nuclear weapons. And when you look at our show images page this evening, look at the first one, slide 52. China's new satellite crusher. Is a space Pearl Harbor coming? As Beijing sees it, American satellites constitute debris. So they're putting up these satellites. The Xi'an 21 has a robotic arm that can be used to move space junk. There are more than 100 million pieces of junk floating around the Earth. Boy, I remember, 5 years ago you and I were talking about this, and there were 4,000 dead satellites or stuff we need to get rid of. When you start talking about 100 million pieces of junk, this is debris floating off of various things that go up and come down in orbit. Anyway, they're saying they're going to capture that stuff. Various methods have been proposed in the past to get rid of dead satellites and debris up there. And one of them was to put a satellite up in orbit and put it in contra orbit, against the orbit of all the satellites that are up there now, and to blow up a sandbag. At, you know, you're traveling at 17,500 miles an hour in a contrary orbit to the other orbiting things at 17,500 miles an hour. So you're going to be having sand grains hit the debris at better than 35,000 miles an hour. And believe me, this cleans the path. And so when the Chinese say they're going to put up a satellite to clean those kind of things with these robotic arms, those robotic arms can also go over and cozy up some of our satellites and either take pictures of or rip them apart. You know, it's incredible. But here they're telling you right straight to your face what they're doing. Brendan Weichert, the author of Winning Space, says how America remains a superpower, tells Gatestone, that's the article source, that the Chinese satellite was launched into geosynchronous orbit where many of America's most sensitive satellite systems, those critical to nuclear command, communications and control, and surveillance and military communications, are located. So they're putting it right up in the middle where we don't want them. And this is so that they can cut down our communications, cut them off completely while they attack us. They're getting ready. You know, they've been doing this for a couple of decades. They and the Russians have been putting pieces on the chessboard, getting ready for the moment when they're going to strike the United States. So when we talk about EMP shields, as you just a while ago, and as I mentioned, it is important. We've got stock. The price not going up or anything. We still got our discounts in place, so we're not playing into inflation and, you know, delivery mania, because we put all these on the shelf about 2 months ago. We realized things were going to head this way, so we produced a bunch of them and put them on the shelf. You can still get them at the right price, so do that. You can go to, you know, Doug's got a link up there. You can just go to the thing and put in your passwords.
Yeah, and please. You might. I beg of people to do this, because we want you back in the event of something that happens. We want you safe. Okay, go ahead, sir. Sorry.
Yeah, right. To the problem of a war, China and Russia and Iran now joining them, and possibly North Korea, they want to create civil war in the United States, civil disobedience, so that martial law is imposed, or they try to impose it from the White House. And while we're in disarray, they're going to attack us on land and by sea, east, west coast, and in the Gulf Coast. It's going to be the moment they're waiting for. Now, to that argument, the elite, if you wish, the Illuminists, the rich buggers of this world, and particularly the United States, they've been preparing bunkers that are really well hidden underground, and they can go into these things and survive for a long time. And slide 43. The CEO of a large doomsday bunker builder says that the global elite, quote, fear a rebellion is brewing. That's us, you know, saying, you know, you guys have put us into this mess. We want you out of the White House. And, you know, we know it's coming. It's going to be an armed rebellion. And we're going to have all kinds of sides to it, religious and economic and, you know, political. And so they're saying here, according to the CEO, the bunker builders for the elite, those who are in power currently fear a rebellion of those who they are ruling over. Ron Hubbard is not the one, you know, for in Utah, but Ron Hubbard is the name of this guy. And he's the head of Atlas Survival Shelters. While he was being interviewed by the Canadian Prepper, tells us right away, the bunker building business is exploding as the elitists begin to fear the masses waking up. America is within days, if not weeks, of a rebellion. There is a panic buy of bunkers right now, especially in the United States. Time to pay attention, folks. If you haven't prepared, you don't have to do it all at once, I guess, but any preparation you make, any extra food, any extra water, wood, fuel, anything like that, gasoline, any of that that you can afford to get now is what you didn't have yesterday. It's good to put it aside so you've got at least something. Normally people take months to prepare, but we're now getting down to the wire. And go to our website, standeo.com, see what Holly's put up, all kinds of links. Also over to daretoprepare.com, which tells you where to get stuff that you need. This has been up there for years, and we've been updating as times changed and suppliers changed, but it's time. Do not delay any longer. We are facing crises from the sun and from civil disorder and from invasion and attack by superpowers. We are at that point. Do not delay.
Stan, I got a real quick question if I could ask you, and I know you didn't know the answer to this. So I've got 15 gallons of gas stored. It's 89 octane when I bought it. It's been on the shelf for, sadly, and it's my fault, for over a year. I don't know if it's varnish now at this point, or nail polish, or whatever, remover, nail polish, but I don't know if it's good. Is there any way to rehabilitate that with like some sort of additive to make that non-problematic. Go ahead.
Yes. We've stored gasoline for decades and rotated use of it. And sometimes I'd forget and some would get to be a year old, some would get to be a year and a half old. And what we do every time we pour some of that gasoline into a vehicle or, you know, a lawnmower, whatever, I add a small percentage of what's called PRI, P for Peter, R for Robert, I for India. PRI restores the oomph, if you wish, to the gasoline. And they have a PRID, which is for diesel. And we've kept diesel for like 15 years at a time and put some of this into it as we put it into our generators. And we've had no problem at all. Now, Holly wants to say something. What's that, Holly?
In the Dare to Prepare, it says that the shelf life of regular gasoline is about 15 months. And for diesel, it's considerably longer.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's without treatment. You can use it safely.
Okay. Right.
All right.
And, you know, I guess the gas prices and availability are going to continue to go up. So if you've got safe metal, you know, military type gas cans, it's time to fill them up or to get them, you know, if you can. A lot of people are trying to get them now. We've prepared various ways to get heat, to heat the house and to cook with. Wood burning stove, you know, in the middle, in the living room, it's like our fireplace, you know, for household heat. And then the extra propane bottles out the back for cooking on the barbie, you know, and we've got a solar, you know, a solar cooker, which we can cook, you know, meals in using sunlight when you do have sun. Our backyard at the moment is a mess because I haven't stacked all the wood we got in, but we've got several cords of hardwood to, you know, stave off the cold when it comes, because electricity, gas, those kind of things are going to be scarce if available at all. In our case, we have solar electric plus backup diesel generators because the sun doesn't always shine. It's bright enough to just charge your batteries for solar. And we've put in our grounds and everything else, like we've been telling people, so that the house is grounded for EMP shields. We've done everything I can think of at the moment. You know, other than building a bunker or something like that. But so it's time, folks, to reassess your cupboard and your emergency supplies and go to, you know, the prepper sites and things like that and see what they suggest as well. We don't know everything, but...
And for extra points, go to get Holly's book, Dare to Prepare. And I should have, Stan, referenced that in that question. I should have picked up that book and looked at the shelf life of gasoline. My bad. But, folks, all the answers, most of the answers that you'll ever need are in that book, Dare to Prepare. And I want to thank Holly personally for writing that book. It's a great book. If you don't have a copy, get it now. Yeah, this is a sales pitch because you need to be prepared and you need to dare to prepare. Dare to Prepare. Go to standeo.com, click on the link for Dare to Prepare, and make sure you really take heed of what's in there. Thank you, Holly, for writing that, and thank you, Stan, for being part of this prep movement.
Sure, and thank you. I mean, this book is good for a Christmas present, excellent for a Christmas present, because we print it here in the United States, and we printed supplies ahead of time. You know, our warehouse is kind of full at the moment, but we have stock. We have, you know, the printers that we use here have stock as well of paper. So we're not going to be impacted by the shortage of paper and various other things being withheld, like inks and things like that. We're good to go. So get them now.
And we've not raised
prices. We haven't raised our prices. We probably should. I'm just thinking. But anyway, we haven't done that. We'll have to look at this and see what the reprint costs will be for the 632-page book, which weighs about 3.5 pounds. If it's going to be significant, then we may have to raise our prices later in the year. But right now, we've got stock that we've had printed for a while at the old price. So have a look at it and think about Christmas presents. These are save-your-lifetime presents.
In many ways, because at the size of that book and the weight of the book, after you're done reading it, just keep it by your bedside. Somebody comes in, you can smack them over the head with it, and it'll do a good job. But a lot of great information in that book.
Yeah, yeah. Our friend Tom Homan, the former, you know, kind of temporary head of ICE for President Trump, slide 54, he has a go on Fox News, a video we put up there, slide 54, you can click into it, about, you know, Biden just lying to the Americans over, you know, secretly sneaking migrants, illegal migrants, in by plane to various places. And those places are, for the most part, Republican strongholds that they want to diffuse with these illegals voting Democrat, you know. And it's Tom says it like it is. I mean, our company, our Shield company, deals with Tom and with President Trump in the back burner there. But so I really like to put up comments when he makes them. He's a former Border Patrol officer himself. And one of his friends that served with him is also a close friend of ours. And so we're a close-knit group. And we complain to each other, I guess, because nobody else seems to be listening about how bad the situation at the border is. It's time that we take action to stop this nonsense and hopefully be able to reverse some of it before the, you know, the rebellion, the Civil War has to start. Just bad times. But anyway, Tom's a good man.
He's a scary dude. I interviewed him in Washington, D.C. And, you know, I don't know, man. Just his look could knock you over. He's a great guy, but a scary guy. I wouldn't want to make him angry, but he knows what he's talking about.
When he speaks, he projects with force and meaning.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember sitting across the table from him, and he kind of leaned over, and I'm thinking, man, you know, yeah, I felt a little intimidated. I got to say, but he good guy, and he was very passionate about what he was talking about.
Absolutely.
Tom Homan, a great man, great American.
I hope we can get him back in the seat there.
I did too.
So yeah. Many Border Patrol agents have been asking for him to come back somehow, which means that we'll have to have a hefty overthrow of those who have stolen our country. And, you know, it's time.
Do you think, let me ask this, Stan, do you think that we're going to regain control in some way, shape, or form, or do you think it's going to be at the end of a fire stick, shall we say? You know, an old Indian term.
We're going to try. And this trying, as I've said many times, will create, you know, such schisms in the population of this country and in other countries that rely on us that we will see a weakening of our government, of our militaries, to the point that we're going to be attacked from external forces while we're fighting amongst ourselves. And so even if you rebel against this and try to overthrow what they've done, it's going to weaken us at that point in time when Russia and China are sitting there with their guns cocked, their ships close by, their satellites up there waiting. You know, if we don't, we're going to be attacked and taken over. If we do, we're going to be attacked and taken over. Let's see, which one do you take? You know, I prefer to at least do something rather than just lay down and let them just roll us flat here in this country and take us over with the communist socialist stuff that's behind all these moves.
Amen.
I just couldn't live just not doing anything. Just say, oh, well, okay, I guess that's the way it is. No, that's why you and I talk about this here and in lectures and op-eds and stuff like that and on our websites. We are trying to get people alerted and those who are in positions to do something about it, to organize and do something about it. There will be survivors, I'm pretty sure, of the attack on the United States. I don't think the church will be here for that. I think they'll be raptured sometime between now and when the United States is clobbered, destroyed. But there will be survivors, I'm pretty sure, surviving and gathering in the Rocky Mountains on the eastern slopes, somewhere between Colorado Springs and the border to Arizona, along the front there. The Hopi Indians have told us that. The George Washington's dream vision that was recounted tells us that when the invaders attack America and destroy it, there will be an enclave that will head towards the eastern slopes and form camps to resist and to rebuild. And an angel will part the invading clouds and move these invaders out of the country. So there will be a small remnant, I think, that will be functioning during the reign of Jesus and the thousand-year reign. But most of the United States will be destroyed. So anyway, okay. Property value is going to go up there, I'm sure. But To give you an example, you know, supporting this, you know how the Mormons, you know, have prepared, been preparing like the Seventh-day Adventists for decades. And to that end, the Mormon Church out of Utah have bought properties and established them, ranch properties on the western slopes that we know of here in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado. And they've done that so that they have places to run to, you know, when the attacks start, so that they have food, shelter, and, you know, organization to help the elderly, particularly on the west slopes of the Rockies. So things are being done here, whether you know about it or not. Big preparations have been in play for decades, and we've now come about to the point where they're going to be needed. Anyway, yeah.
It's closer than we think, I believe.
You know, I keep talking about Damascus, you know, and the Israelis and watch them. There, in slide 46, if you click on the picture first, come on, picture, come up. It's a big picture. It's a Google Earth picture of the city Homs. It's called HOMS, Syria, where the Israelis attacked just in the last couple of days to destroy a Syrian, Syrian-based but Iranian-funded weapons cache and development, you know, an assembly area. And if you look at this map, you go down the map to Damascus, and that's across a mountain range. And you can see that Syria extends out from the sea coast up there at the top near Homs, all the way down over the mountains, down to Damascus. Now, Damascus has already been hit several times in depots that were stashing, you know, Iranian missiles and armaments and short range, but not nuclear. If the Homs area and Damascus are, you know, stocked with nuclear weapons of any kind, or with missiles that could, you know, high numbers of them that could really blast and burn Israel, the north part, the middle part, severely, then Israel is going to have to move preemptively to strike Damascus and or Homs. Now, the biblical thing says that, surprise, surprise, in one night, you know, Damascus overnight becomes a ruinous heap. And I don't think that's going to be due to volcanism in the area, even though there have been volcanoes that fizzled out and threw black ash all over the place. But there's no sign of volcanoes of any size being a threat there. So I think it's going to be a nuclear attack. And, you know, Israel, with the help of the United States, perhaps with the B-1 bomber, are going to make that happen if things continue as we suspect. Anyway, keep an eye on Israel and its attacks on Syrian-located but Iranian-backed weapons caches and troop movements and storage. They're coming for Israel and us at the same time.
Yeah.
They are coming.
Okay.
Now, to that end, in slide 37, it says Israel deploys large missile defense aerostat equipped with high-tech radar. If you click on the picture, that'll give you a bigger picture of this blimp. It's what it amounts to, with radar arrays on it and stuff to detect incoming missiles. You know, and if they're up 2,000 or 3,000 feet with this in the air, they can see further over the horizon. By the way, the Earth is curved, so you have to get up that high to see over, you know, the horizon. It's not flat. And so they put these things up in the air to give them early warning to target the incoming missiles with Iron Dome or something else. I had not seen this before, and I was quite impressed with the concept. In slide 38, there's a company called Super Tower, and they make these blimpo things for the U.S. Army and for other nations to use for that very thing, to surveil and to give early warning to not only military threats, but environmental, you know, wind and things like that. If you click on the picture there, it'll take you to their website, and it'll show an interesting thing. It's one of the forms of these blimps. It's called a floating wind turbine. And they say, and the article is quite adamant that this will work and does work, is that you get these like donut-shaped, but stretched donut with fins, blimps that you put up in the air and several thousand feet, and you run three wires. You run one wire, which is the power it generates down to, you know, the ground where you can use it, and two wires to tether it. The wind does blow, and so you need to keep it from crashing. So these tethers are two strong guy wires that keep it in place. And I've got pictures of that up in 40 and 41. We'll get to that in a minute. But there's a turbine in this hollow part of the wind turbines you see in slide 40, 41. And that turbine is turned by, you know, the wind. And the higher you go, the faster the wind blows. It's not slowed down by the surface conditions, you know, trees and rocks and mountains, things like that. I wonder how far back those things can be blown by the wind, like 45 degrees before they stop producing, because they will give, you know, the guy wires will give to a degree, but it won't let it go all the way to the ground because they can control some of the lift by controlling the wings that they've got on it. The Israeli device is more the, not power generation, but, you know, the surveillance and detection of things like that. The power generated can be sent to the ground, they say, by wire, as I show here in these images, but they can also be sent by microwave beam, where they beam down to the ground to a mat that, you know, that picks up the microwave energy and converts it directly to electricity. I think that might be a bit problematic doing it that way, because as the wind changes direction, your mat is stuck on the ground. And so unless you can have a big mat to catch the microwave as it tilts 45 degrees or so in strong breezes, it's not going to be as effective as a wire coming down. So what they've done is they produce high voltage electricity, which makes a much lighter weight copper wire, because the high voltage will you know, pass quicker. And with lower voltage, like we use in the house, you've got this, you know, 12 gauge wire and bigger. That's so heavy. If you were doing it for, you know, 30,000 watts of power, it would be a weight that would tug the balloon down. So that's why they use high voltage, bring it down the ground through a transformer and then to the voltage that works your house or car, whatever that they're aiming it at. Okay. Now look,
No, it's fascinating. That's just fascinating.
I was quite impressed with actually slide 39 is telling, you know, the guys that actually kind of started this was two you know, fellow students, and they were let's see, aeronautical engineers. Okay, they were in Massachusetts where they tested it. I forget where it says they were students together, but anyway, that's the article that says that while they were students, they kind of kicked us around, you know, at the pub and whatever, floating a balloon 2,000 feet in the air to generate power and bring it back down to be useful. And that's kind of cool. I looked at this thing from the side. Let me see if I got a picture of that from the side. Yeah. Slide 41. Have a click on that. Now, if you kind of blow this picture up and play with the density of the blue and the white, you know, the color balance, the black balance, you'll see that underneath those two yellow arrows are two little light lines, which are the guy lines that they hold that turbine, you know, stable with, and don't let it fly off into orbit. And then if you go back over to, and by the way, in slide 41, you'll see like ripples or like ribs in the main turbine. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that there are two reasons for that. One is for ease of assembly and making it, you know, join the segments together. But also, those little ribs have valleys in between them, and that creates a vortex spinning around, which is a more efficient way to keep the thing stable in the path that you want in the shape of the wind there, or in the path of the wind. Slide 40, if you look at that, it's a really high-resolution picture, but it shows you one of these turbines with the red line being the power line coming down to the Jeep and transformers down at the bottom there, and give you an idea of how close it can be and still generate the power for you. The higher you go, the higher the wind is, which is really good for making efficient use of wind power. Okay. That's enough on wind power and things like that. earthquakes in the United States, slide 48. If you look at that, I've included not only the earthquakes for the last 7 days in the United States, the lower 48, but also the earthquake zones, the threat zones that are known and posted by USGS. And you'll see that we're seeing a few smaller quakes, you know, the threes, over in the right side of the thing where the Mississippi River is, where the New Madrid fault line is. And so there's a bit of activity this week. There's nothing yet to be concerned about, but it is a known area and it's seeing activity. Other than that, minor activity up in the northwest of the United States, in the Oregon coast and in the Juan de Fuca plate and down into California. A couple of interesting ones in the Gulf of California as well, showing activity there. That's just your general report of that for the day. And
and folks listening to this on Global Star or whatever by audio, just go to HagmanReport.com, click on the video for today, follow along and look at the map. You can do that very easily, HagmanReport.com, two ends on Hagman, click on today's video, and or you can drill down for other videos. You can comment if you're signed up for Rumble or Brighteon. It's on Rumble and Brighteon as well. But interesting images, all of these, and important as well. So, okay.
I haven't posted anything on La Palma because I haven't seen any evidence, and neither of the observers over there, of the situation increasing with the Cumbre de Vieja volcano erupting again. There have been some odd, Richter 4, slightly over that, earthquakes down deep, 20 miles underneath La Palma in the last week, but nothing to signify that it's going to be active again. Things are winding down. The tremors that you get in the volcanic tubes are lowering in intensity and number. So I think that La Palma is probably going to go to sleep for a while. It's not saying there won't be something later, but I think for this year, we can probably rest on that one. Could be wrong, but that's...
You can only live, in my view anyway, you can only live on the cusp of it's going to happen any second, only so long before the fatigue sets in and you stop paying attention to it. So maybe this is a gift. I don't know. But, keep your eye on it. But don't, it's not going to.
Yeah, while they're having their vacation from an active volcano there, they're going to have to shovel out a lot of ash. Holly showed us a picture the other day of ash dunes in La Palma, rather than sand dunes. It's ash dunes, which are, microscopic glass particles. Walking in it barefoot is rather problematic, and breathing is rather problematic. And so they're going to have a big cleanup while the thing rests for a while. I don't know why people are moving in droves to that area. They must be having a death wish or something. But anyway, that's the way it is. Yeah. I talked about China doing the missile things, the satellite things to, get rid of a lot of our communication satellites in the military when they want to. If you go to slide 51, it's in the Israeli news. It says, Russia turns on Israel, blast the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force, airstrikes in Syria. And there have been a number of them. And probably for the most part, Israel has admitted to, we did that one over there. And they were parts of nuclear facilities that were being developed in Syria. This happens in Iran, but also in Syria, they were doing things to store nuclear facilities. And if they get an active bomb from wherever, if Iran does it, and puts it into Damascus, you can see why that's going to be a target. Now, the Russian ambassador to Syria, Alexander Yefimov, on Thursday criticized the recent string of alleged Israeli airstrikes in Syria, saying that they undermine the joint Kremlin-Damascus efforts to stabilize the country and even pose a threat to civilian air traffic. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I've got my feet up off the floor. I mean, that's just so much BS.
Oh, man. All right. Okay.
New York City here in the United States, slide 47. New York City, garbage piles up as sanitation workers fight the vaccine mandate. I think it's only about 17% of the sanitation engineers refused to be vaccinated after the mandates took effect on Monday. Now, we've seen this before when various, you know, power, you know, failures happened in New York and how trash piled up. But you can see now from the article that it's really starting to pile up. And it just brought it home to me. What are people going to do when their local trash service cannot function, whether it be to strikes or whether it be to power, you know, electric power or gas power and all that, not being available for the trash company to move this stuff to the dump? What are you going to do with your trash? Now, I said to Holly, do we need to get, you know, one of these trash compactors that cost you left leg and crush up all of our trash? Well, in our case, we have a burning pile out the back and the right to burn trash. So we can take our tin cans and stuff and drop a sledgehammer on them, and they go flat as a pizza. And we'll put those in a place, in a bin, you know, the metal parts, and they will burn all the rest in the trash pit. So people need to think about these alternates. If you live in a, you know, tight neighborhood, then you may not be able to do that. So you're going to have to figure a plan B.
Plan B is in Holly Dale's Dare to Prepare book. I'm telling you, Plan B is, I prefer Plan B. And in Dare to Prepare on page 378, there is instructions on how to build a catapult for your garbage. I joke, but hey, it's Plan B. I'm sorry.
Will it reach to the White House?
Will it reach to the White House? Yeah.
Yeah, Gracie Mansion, you know, if you're in New York and the White House, everywhere else. Yeah, exactly. Wow.
Well, anyway, these are things that you need to address now and try to do the best you can to mitigate that situation should it occur, which there's every likelihood these loss of services, community services, will be happening, whether it be from a bomb, whether it be from invasion, whether it be from solar, the coronal mass ejections, EMP pulses, whatever. Look at what you do about your trash, your electricity, your water, you know, grocery stores. When you lose all these things, what are you going to do? It's just another reminder. I wanted to put that article up so you can see the tons of trash that's going to be collecting. It's really not to be blamed on the workers that don't want to be vaccinated, because you know, I don't want to be vaccinated either. So yeah, they're within their right.
I'm there with you, man. Ain't going to happen. Come at me with a needle. Get ready for some lead coming out here.
Obviously we live in Colorado here, Holly and I, and you know, I occasionally have to go get surgery for adhesions and things like that. And I've just had my surgery for the year, but the hospital there was telling me that, look, you know, if the adhesions become painful, we'll figure out a way to take more pain meds or something, because we're not going to be able to do elective surgeries all the time. You know, that's elective. It's not life threatening, just hurts a lot. And I saw in an article 50 here that Colorado hospitals are being overwhelmed with the sudden increase in COVID victims or patients. They've set up a tier system, and they're now at tier 3, which means that they can take you if you go to your local hospital here in Colorado and they don't have room for your facilities to treat you. They can, without your permission, transport you to another hospital where they want you, where they can serve you. And that might be 100 miles away, but that's your problem. So this is passed into you know, legislation here. You click on the article, you can read about it, and so we all kind of think, well, let's don't get sick and need to go to the hospital, because we might end up in Denver, you know, 2-hour drive away or whatever. Anyway, that's just local news for us there.
Surgery is going to become I don't know. I mean, my wife is facing some surgery for similar issues. You know, abdominal surgery is necessary, but she cannot get scheduled. And I'm going to tell you right now, my plan was to take the surgeon's family hostage initially to make sure, you know, while they were, you know, in surgery, to make sure everything was going to go okay. Now my plan is to take them hostage to have the surgery done. I don't know whether, I mean, this is not elective surgery. This is needed surgery. And the right. Same with me, you know, I've got to have surgery coming up, but for whatever reason, I guess maybe because it's, you know, from the neck up and they want to smack me around a little bit when I'm out, you know, I don't know. I don't know. There's something not right with this whole thing. I don't know what's going on, but that's an interesting point you bring up. Go ahead, sir.
Well, you'll probably agree with me that a lot of the surgeries done today are in the elderly, because as you get older, things start to break and need to be repaired. So it's another way to cull the herd and get rid of the elderly. If you can't have the surgery, you're going to, you know, pass a little bit ahead of schedule, I guess. But anyway, that's madness.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy how things are. And I'm waiting for the day, Stan. I don't know about you, but I'm waiting for the day when they say, we're not going to treat you unless you had the vax, which brings me to the point. You know, what is what's that about? Their insistence. I mean, I've never seen anything like this, where people are not even I don't want to make this a political issue, but the more on the left are saying, you know, what's the trust your government, trust science. It's a big deal, and we on the conservative side are saying, wait a minute, what's the big deal if you've got the treatment, if you got the vax, then don't worry about me. I mean, and then they liken it to drunk driving, it's just crazy. I don't know. But I'm waiting for the point where they're going to say, no vax, no treatment. And when that happens, all bets are off, because I think that that's going to be a
death sentence to a lot of people. Yeah. You know, yeah. For religious or health reasons or age reasons, whatever, there are legitimate reasons to not get the vaccination. And free choice, you know, is one of them. If everybody else, if 87% of the people of the country or whatever have been vaccinated, well, they tell us that the science says that they can't be, you know, killed by COVID, which is rubbish anyway. But if that's the case, why are the hospitals worried? You know, they're all vaccinated, and the patients they're accepting are vaccinated in the future, if that's the mandate. Then, okay, if we come in and we catch COVID, it's our problem. But we don't have to have the shot. It is not necessary for the hospital to function and for their staff to perform their duties.
Parallel healthcare system, I suppose. They want segregation by vax status, you know, to mirror the segregation by the color of your skin some years ago. Who are the segregationists now, as opposed to, you know, 50 plus years ago? Well, even back then, I suppose an argument could be made. But of, you know, who's responsible for that. But nonetheless, it's horrible.
Look, even before, if I even go to visit the surgeon in the Springs, I have to have a week beforehand. I have to have a COVID test to say that I'm clear. If I want to go get a test here in the local hospital in Pueblo for, you know, lung function test, which, you know, they do every year or something like that, I still have to go a week ahead of time and get a COVID clearance test before I can go in the hospital and do that. Yet if I want to go visit somebody there, I can just wear a mask, at the moment anyway. The rules are just contradictory and silly. They really are. I just don't understand this, except to cause confusion.
Yeah. There it is.
I noticed that NASA's preparing a large rocket. Now, I don't have this in any of my slides, but they're a large rocket to go back to the moon. I think in early 2022, they're going to launch that. And I'm wondering, it's not going to have a crew on it, so it's going to be putting stuff up there, possibly to prepare pods and stuff for astronauts who go in the following year or the year thereafter to build housing and to make oxygen and fuel from the minerals there on the moon. When I saw that article, I thought immediately about some other articles I'd seen about how they would have robots build the housing there on the moon, or on Mars for that matter. And there was an article in the news that triggered my interest here. It says, world's largest 3D printed neighborhood to break ground in Texas. New property development in Austin, Texas is set to become the world's largest community of 3D printed homes. Now, they're large. In fact, you can click on the text there in the article and see the picture of the neighborhood they propose. But it's using cement that has volcanic ash in it, which makes a very durable, hard cement. And they have big pipes, you know, like what they pump concrete with to do your basements and stuff, you know, with cranes and things like that. But these are controlled by a computer. And you can see in the picture on that site that the wall supporting next to a garage here in this first house in the picture, that has layers in it. You can see the layers as the the concrete layer for that house is laid down. And all the rooms, electrical outlets, gas, water things, all that kind of stuff is pre-designed into a home like this with, with the cutouts and everything. So that layer by layer, half inch by half inch as it goes up, it builds all the rooms, and they can build up to a 3,000 square foot home using this technique. And it's probably last year, I think it was, that I talked in the show about the Israelis now having a 3D printer that prints food, hamburgers. That's just, mind-boggling to me, but that's Star Trek, that's a replicator. And replicator on a large scale, of course, is buildings. And these can all be built on the moon or Mars or wherever long before the crew gets there, and then pressurized, tested for leaks and things like that, and repaired by the local robot that they built it. So that when people land their spaceships there, they've got, bedroom and, facilities there waiting for them, which is kind of cool when you think about it. So, anyway. Okay, now let me catch the sun stuff here quickly. Slide 42, what's called the heliographic plot or layout. If you click on the picture, this shows the bright white areas show approaching active regions on the sun that can produce coronal mass ejections and CMEs, et cetera, et cetera. Now, these are to the left of center there. You'll see down at the bottom of the graph, there's a zero point, and that's when it's pointing straight at Earth, the sun. To the left of that, it's showing you how many degrees away these moving spots are, so we have to be concerned about it. And where we are looking now at about 30 to 45 degrees, on the left there from center, shows us we're going to be seeing some more threats. One in the southern hemisphere, one in the northern hemisphere. One in the southern hemisphere is not really bright, and I suspect that within a week when that approaches us, that we might get some minor flares out of it, but nothing that would be, astounding. The top one, it has brighter spots and more of them, and this will be high latitude, which would mean if it does throw anything at the Earth, it'll probably just glance off of the northern hemisphere. It'll be a high halo that will hit us. So again, nothing serious to worry about there. Slide 43 was kind of interesting. It's in the what they call the 304 angstrom wavelength, but it shows a lot of the flares and stuff better than some of the other images that they put out on the sun. These arching fire things, reaching out like that. And on this one, you can see at the top left is that active region I just showed you a day before, maybe 2 days before that green graph was made. And you can see it's got some bright filaments, hot filaments erupting from it. Go to slide 44. I'm going quickly here. You'll see that
we've got about 7 minutes left.
Do we? Sorry, I was, my clock was saying.
Our clocks are off. So daylight savings
time. I wondered about the daylight saving. I wasn't sure whether it was everybody in the country went to daylight saving or not, but Holly says, this isn't Australia, mate. This is, everybody goes to daylight saving. So,
that of all the states that participate.
What states don't participate?
Phoenix for one, I think Hawaii doesn't.
Parts of Indiana, I think, right? I don't.
Yes, that's another one.
Well, I guess I wasn't too silly by asking the question,
No, see, we do ours in increments, 5-minute increments. We decide when they... never mind. I can't even make a joke about that. But
you do have to wonder. I mean, with farmers and stuff, with the animals, they got to be fed at a certain time. They're expecting the tucker. It doesn't matter to them whether it's dark or light. It just means that the farmer's got to get up in dark, but still at the same time biologically. If you don't have daylight saving, I don't know whether I support the argument for daylight saving or not. I don't know. I guess marketing wise, sales wise, maybe when you've got such a large country coast to coast. But anyhow, okay, that slide we're looking at there is showing the magnetic field lines at slide 44. And those field lines are concentrated in the upper left on that one I was telling you about. These do give us an indication of the severity. At the moment, there aren't enough in either of these spots on the left for me to be concerned. The one at the bottom, the bright spot, the bottom left, does have a coronal hole next to it, but it's a small one. So I think basically this is telling us, you can look at slide 45 for a clearer picture without all the magnetic lines. This is telling us that for the next week to 2 weeks, that I don't expect a lot of heavy activity from the sun, but you still need to get your EMP shield ahead of time.
Yes.
How's that sound?
It sounds good, and I'm 100% agreeing with that. Because one of these days, we've had some near hits, not near misses, but near hits. One of these days, I think we're gonna well, suffer.
This picture of the day didn't show.
Nope.
I checked it.
Okay. Are you there?
Yep.
Sorry.
Right here.
Clicked the wrong button there. Huh. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll try again.
Okay.
Let's see what the issue is.
All right. The photo of the day on our site was down. I was just asking Holly to check that. Okay, that's all on my show images page today. We're now open questions till the end.
Well, you know, you covered a lot of ground here, I think, and I think we did. During the first segment, which I did, it was just a abbreviated segment prior to you coming on. I talked about the big picture. I don't know whether you saw, it was a 2-minute video. You know that COP26 or the climate change summit over there. A lot of focus was on Biden, you know, going to sleep and unfortunate bodily function stuff from Biden.
Well, I think what happens, that had been ignited by somebody lighting a cigar or something. Wow.
Yeah, rumor has it Camellia had a stogie in the works. But anyway, one thing that I was I saw was a speech by Prince Charles talking about using the word, the pronoun his, in conjunction with the 2030 agenda, the climate summit agenda, where, you know, everything, we need a world army, we need a world government, we need the consolidation of power. And he kept referring to his, under his guidance, a small h his, not capital H his. Mm. You know, I was wondering who he's talking about. And it was an interesting 2-minute clip. This was on featured on a Twitter posting by, I think, COVID-1984. It was a friend of his or a friend of whoever. But I was just kind of intrigued about how they're openly, these people are openly coming out and talking about the very things you talked about in 1976 with your book Cosmic Conspiracy, and of course later with Cosmic Conspiracy and More. So they're not trying to even hide this agenda anymore about this, you know, antichrist system, globalist system. And you know, we're seeing weird things happen. That concert where those people died, I think ten people passed away in the hospital, hundreds hospitalized. How a cult like that show was, I don't know. It's in short, in summary, and some in substance, I guess, right now we're looking at things kind of speeding up toward a cataclysmic end.
Oh, sorry, what? What were you saying to me?
To fix the photo of the day, Holly, come on.
No. She's working on it. While she's doing that, I've been watching the former President Obama as well.
He's got yesterday's page up. He needs to refresh his browser. It works fine.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, all right. Maybe it's me.
Let me check. I love this. Live radio. Let me check on your photo of the day here. Got to get back
to
there
he comes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
You
okay.
Had an old page coming up.
Yeah, I had the old page. I didn't refresh. Anyway. Yeah. But we can watch Obama too. I mean, he's been in this Scotland meeting with the climate change, and he's kind of been moving behind the scenes with Biden, trying to make his lips move and say the things that Obama wants. I've got him listed on my potential antichrists or false prophets on the page.
All right. So. Well, with that, we're going to check that out and keep, watch Stan's analysis of the candidates for the man of the end of the earth, the Antichrist candidate. Stan, thank you so very much. Appreciate your time.
Appreciate thank you. Being, have a good evening.
You too. And appreciate your accommodating me in these hurrying times. God bless everyone. Good night. See you tomorrow. Remember, pass the first hour and the second hour, for this first segment and this segment along to everyone. God bless. Good night.